Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
Hello and welcome back, Bat fans. This is Andy Piper, co-host of the Beyond the Batcave podcast.
Here with Taylor Jackson, the other co-host of Beyond the Batcave.
Oh, we're so excited today. We're a bit late to the party on this one, but we're finally ready to talk about the Suicide Squad Extended Edition. And that's what we're going to do. I don't feel like there's anything else we need to talk about at this moment.
Nope.
Let's just talk about it.
Awesome.
So, Suicide Squad Extended Edition. This is really fresh on my mind. I wasn't as psyched about this one as I was Batman v Superman, because I wasn't hearing the same things about it, you know? Batman v Superman, it was like, OMG, this is a life-changing experience. It's day and night from the theatrical version. I heard no such thing about Suicide Squad. But, nevertheless, I still enjoyed it quite a bit more than I did the theatrical version.
Yeah, I would say about the same. So let's go through and talk about some of these new little things for some of our curious fans who maybe haven't seen it yet and might not be planning on getting around to it. I don't know. Or just you maybe missed some things. So I felt like there were a lot of very subtle mini scene extensions that like I almost didn't pick up on that were new.
Yeah, they just add in like a couple more lines.
Yeah, a couple more seconds. I felt like there was a lot of that. As far as like big scenes go, or like big additions, I think the biggest thing was obviously Harley. We got some more Harley and Joker, which we kind of knew from the trailer we were going to get with the motorbike and everything. And then we got some more Deadshot, too. Not so much like backstory, but kind of like his interactions with Flag. There was quite a bit more there as well. What were some of the things that you noticed or you liked as far as the new scenes?
The newer scenes, basically what you're saying, it was not a lot of big new scenes. It was a lot of little moments that got added in. However, I felt like those moments really made a big difference when it came to the overall feel of the movie. And it really, I don't want to say that it happened again like it did with Batman v Superman, but this flowed a little bit better. It made some things that I thought didn't work in the theatrical version work for the extended version. And I guess we can dive into that a little bit more later, but it was really just all the little character moments that they cut out. I liked all of them. I liked them all a lot, and I don't know why they were gone.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing is I think so many of these characters, like, if we go back to our initial review of the film, like, we talked about, you know, like, the main two or three of the squad, you know, mainly Harley and Deadshot, and then we didn't have anything else for anybody else to say. Like, oh, yeah, this person looked good, had that one funny line, but that was about it, you know, for that character. Where here, we get more Boomerang, we get more Killer Croc, we get more Katana, you know, like, all these things, with the exception of Slipknot. That we get more of and we get more appreciation.
Still laughing at Slipknot.
Oh, yeah.
Like 6 months later. Still funny. So I guess you could phrase it like this. It just hit me. The motivations for the characters were much clearer because of these moments. Mm-hmm. In some of the cases of the main characters, Deadshot had clearer motivations. Flag had a lot more of an arc, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Joker, surprisingly enough, I feel like I understand him a lot better. And I... So before, I was like, okay, I like Jared Leto's Joker. I need to see a lot more of this guy before I'm sold on him. Now I am sold. I like this Joker with what I did see of... We just got to see how he operates a little bit more.
Get like his thought process a little more. He kind of explains his philosophy out loud to Harley.
Exactly. It made the scene of Harley's like baptism in the acid a lot more potent because we actually saw the scene that was supposed to go before it. There were a lot of references to that earlier scene in the acid bath scene, and it kind of tied it all together.
Yeah. So let's just kind of talk about these scenes in the context of like what it did for us. So, kind of, I guess, what was your overall impression? Like, what did this extended cut do for you? If anything.
It enhanced the movie's ability to tell the story. And let me just bring up a couple examples. One was, I got a sense of... I'll just mention Rick Flagg, because I feel like his was the first one that stuck out to me. Because in the theatrical cut, I think he's got that one scene where he's complaining to Amanda Waller about how these people are psychopaths and they're freaks, they can't get anything done. Just give me a team of soldiers and I'll make it happen. And then he's talking to Deadshot and he's like, when the shooting starts, you're going to cut and run. And you can see the Deadshot is visibly annoyed by that because in his mind, he's a good man, he's got honor. And then we get into that whole subplot where it shows Flag and Deadshot walking before they get to the building to rescue Amanda Waller. Flag makes a deal with Deadshot. He says, listen, I can pull my own strings. I can get you back with your daughter. Just get me to the top of that building. And he's like, all right. And then when it comes down to it, Deadshot's like, all right, you know what? This is over for me. When he tries to walk away from the mission, Flag's like, it's not over yet. You can't walk away. And you kind of see that Flag realizes that he judged too early, that maybe he's not even any better than these people are. Like, sure, he's a soldier. Sure, Deadshot's a hitman. When it came down to it, he made a deal with him, and he went back on it. He couldn't do anything without Waller, and you kind of see that in his eyes. And so I think that motivation was different. And then it was a little bit more fleshed out with Deadshot and his daughter as well. Like, he realized, oh, everything he's doing right now is to try and make a deal and get back to his daughter. And when he realizes that's not a possibility anymore, he just wants her to know that he's a good man, and that's why he goes through and takes out Incubus and the Enchantress. So that was just one little example of something that I liked. I thought was enhanced, because there were probably two added scenes of just Deadshot and Flag talking,
yeah,
not doing anything else, and that really enhanced character motivations for me.
Yeah, no, I like it as well. I would say, upon initial viewing, I didn't feel like it did much more for the film for me. Aside from what I said earlier, just kind of about like kind of these backseat characters having a bit more of a presence.
Yeah.
But as we talk about it a little more, it does kind of, one thing I thought of while you were talking about that was it kind of gives more of a theme to the movie than it had before, because you get a lot more opportunities. You look at a lot of those deleted scenes, and a lot of them had to do with love and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like how dismantled some of them were, how that's all some of them want, and how they've gone awry, and how can they still have that, you know? And we don't really pick up on it like in the theatrical version, because it's just like, oh, well, that person had a bad relationship, or oh, Deadshot doesn't love, you know? Like, but like with these themes,
yeah,
it's a consistent conversation to the audience.
About love.
And
so true. I didn't notice that. Good pull.
I thought that was really cool, kind of listening to you kind of help me kind of put that together. So let's talk a little bit about kind of the Harley and Joker scenes.
Yeah, that's good.
There's mainly two new ones. Or there's lots little tidbits, but there's two main big ones. There's when the Joker's broken out, the torture scene is a little mm-hmm. more drawn out there.
I'd say that one's almost twice as long as it was before,
I
right?
I think so, too. So that's interesting, and it kind of gives a little more, it makes his actions and his words, I guess, it makes them have a little more sense.
This is a whole new story now.
Yeah.
This is a whole new story of what the Joker and Harley are going through. So the theatrical cut, it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Amanda Waller says she fell in love with him, he shocked her with some paddles until she went crazy,
yeah,
and then he dumps her in a vat of acid, and now they're in love.
And that's kind of what we saw.
And that's all it showed us.
Yeah.
And I was fine with that, but this is just a whole new story that makes a lot more sense.
And when you think about it, like, we were fine with that because we know Joker and Harley.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm trying to think of what that would be like to an outside viewer who doesn't know these characters very well. It's like, wait, how did that happen, you know?
Well,
like,
to me, this turned the Joker from being what he said he was in the movie. He's like, you can't love me, I'm an idea, I'm a state of nature. I can't remember what he says, because this is the first time I've seen it. I'll definitely watch it again. But it turned him from that into an actual person. Because I feel like a lot of the scenes we were left with in the theatrical cut were kind of weird. Like, he's just purring at Ike Barinholtz and, like, telling him he thought he meant that kiss. And it was just some weird stuff. And it was balanced out by some true moments of what is the Joker actually feeling. And it was easier to make sense of because the scenes had more room to breathe. And because he was literally putting on the table what his motivations were. So let's talk about the scene with Harley and the motorcycle. This it seems like chronologically this takes place right before he takes her over to Ace Chemicals and dumps, and she jumps into the
They're in the same clothes. I think that makes sense.
So she wants to know why he won't let her accompany him through his mad journey through life, and he straight up confesses to her. Oh no, I'm thinking of the other scene. Was this the one where she's on the table still, where he tells her that she probed through his earliest memories, really painful things?
That was
things.
On the table.
Okay, so that's where I was thinking about the Joker's motivation. So she's a psychiatrist, right? She's delving into his deepest, most scarring memories, and we don't find out what those are, and that's fine with me. Mm-hmm. But clearly, he resents it. And I think he uses the words like, you left me in this miserable hole of my memories, or something like that. And he just wasn't happy about it. That's why he comes back to torture her like that. And he didn't. Any that was not part of his intent to transform her into Harley Quinn.
He didn't.
He just wanted to hurt her really, really bad.
Right. I thought that was so interesting, because you kind of pick up on like, oh, they fell in love and became this duo, you know? But like, he didn't want her around.
No,
like,
he did not fall in love with her at the beginning.
No, not at all. And so I thought that was such a different, interesting angle. Because even, you know, like in animated stuff, it's always just like, oh, it was just love. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was incredibly interesting.
Okay, so then we go back to that motorcycle scene, and she's saying, just take me with you. He's not going to do it. You're not part of my plans. And then she shoots that trucker. Like, oh my gosh, don't be a trucker when the Joker's around. We've seen this in several movies now.
Didn't even think about that.
All right, so...
But I thought that was interesting, too. Like, I mean, she was a pretty normal person before falling in love with the Joker, from what we can tell.
Yeah.
Like, but she straight up kills someone. I don't know if she's ever killed anybody before, but she, like, without a thought or hesitation, just straight up kill someone.
Who knows if that was her first time, or maybe that's just the depth of her emotion. But somehow she convinces the Joker to take her to where it all started for him. Or maybe that was his idea.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is really the final test. You're not going to jump in that vat of acid for me. And he figures she'll just jump in and he'll leave her. But he realizes, and this is just my own narrative, I'm like putting words in their mouth, but this seems to be what they were going for. She just killed a guy for me. She helped me escape. She's been following me around for weeks, telling me that she loves me. Maybe she really does. Maybe she's my soulmate. And he jumps right in after her. And then he kisses her for the first time, supposedly, that we see. So, yeah, that's what I imagine the narrative to be. And I thought it did enhance their story. It fleshed out Harley as a character, which was, I don't know, it was just refreshing.
Yeah, I think more than anything, this extended cut like solidified the idea in my mind, and probably the intent of David Ayer, was that Harley Quinn was the main character of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we kind of debated, Deadshot and Harley, you know, like, with this, but, like, with those extended scenes, like, this is Harley's movie. And Deadshot's there. And Deadshot...
I think he's still a main character.
He's still a main
Harley
character.
Harley got the most attention, I will say.
Yeah, and she had the most backstory. She had the most depth. She's the only one who really had, like, flashbacks to anything.
Yeah,
so.
Deadshot had one flashback.
Yeah. And kind of going with this love theme, too, like, I thought the line was particularly interesting, kind of insightful for the Joker and Harley, just, like, where she says to him when they're at, kind of stopped the traffic there with the motorbike, you're scared of my heart, but not of a gun. I thought that was really kind of a cool line, where it just, like, kind of shows that, like, the Joker, you know, love, falling in love, it's not part of his plans, and it would just kind of be a... something in his way, at least he thinks. But he's crazy enough that, you know, hey, wave a gun in my face. I'm not scared, you know.
And one other comment I want to make about Harley and the Joker. I've just got a couple more things here, and then I think I'll be good. So I'd said before in the theatrical cut that this was significantly different from any relationship we'd seen of Harley and the Joker before, in that this seemed to be a little bit more pure. Yeah, he tortured her and tossed her in an acid bath, but it was kind of like true love. That's what it was looking like in the theatrical cut. This seems to ring a little more true to me as Harley and the Joker. It's still a little twisted. Like, he made her jump through some hoops so that he could tell her to jump in a bath of acid. And now it has more of a feeling of that codependency, like, maybe they do not have a good relationship at all, but they can't do it without each other. So he comes back for her, after, like, drawing a weird marker mustache on himself and laughing in a circle full of knives and baby clothes.
It was a smiley face.
Like, yeah, I don't know what that was. I thought that was kind of strange that it had no explanation. But it's the Joker. We don't need an explanation.
I mean, this is just my random two cents about that, but I think he's kind of depressed with Harley gone.
Yeah.
So he draws a smiley face on himself.
Oh, to, like, nice thought.
Be that he's putting on a face of,
yeah, I can see
being
that.
Happy.
And then, anyway, the other side of the codependency is that he is consistently telling her, look, I don't want you around, I don't need you around, you annoy me. And she's still just coming around all the time. She's crashing motorcycles in front of his car, making him slam on the brakes. And she always goes back to him. And then we even see, after he quote-unquote dies, she takes off her little necklace that says put in on it. And then when he shows up in her prison cell, she takes him in to recognize him, then she just throws herself right back in his arms, and here we go again. That's what I thought. Like, okay, there, it had more of that feel of, this relationship is not really healthy, but it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And I liked that. I think it raised it to just the right level of twisted that now this rings true as Harley Quinn and the Joker, instead of, they were slightly idealized for the theatrical cut with the things that they chose to include and not include, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Cool. And I think most of the other scenes besides that, kinda, in my mind, in my experience watching it, just kind of, like we mentioned before, just kind of gave that chemistry to the squad. Mm-hmm. And while I still think it's a bit of a stretch, the first time it was definitely, the theatrical cut was more of a stretch for Diablo to say at the end, you know, I already lost one family, I'm not going to lose another.
Yeah.
You know, I remember us talking in our first review about, like, how that was like, what? You guys just barely met. But, like, I don't know, they have all these... Some of the more scenes are, I think there's at least two of them, where one of them spread the word, where they're kind of talking about a plan to get rid of Flag. And then there's a later one where Harley is kind of psychoanalyzing everybody.
Yeah.
Which was kind of fun to see, kind of a bit of Harleen in there instead of just Harley.
Yeah, we see them just interact more, and I realize that they didn't actually show a lot of interacting outside of the action sequences.
They were just walking. They would walk to the next action sequence, and then that was it, you know?
I liked that psychiatrist scene a lot, where she was, like, walking up to people and just analyzing them, because that's where it comes from. Remember later when Boomerang blows up, he's like, why is it every time you open your mouth, it's a knife fight?
Yeah.
And I always love hearing Australians say knife, but the other reason I liked that scene is because now suddenly that's justified. We've seen Harley annoying everybody for the last, you know, hour and a half.
Yeah.
And now he's yelling at her about it, finally, and somebody's... Who was it that said it's a rabbit hole? Don't go... That was Boomerang again, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because somebody was trying to talk to her. Anyway.
I think it was... she was trying to talk to Diablo.
And
then that's what Boomerang said.
Diablo had a little bit more lines as well.
Yeah. I mean, extended bar scene. He kind of had his soapbox there.
Yeah, I think that scene worked a little bit better as well. I just felt like they were more bonded as a team by the time it came for Diablo to say, I lost one family, I'm not going to lose another. I bought it just a little bit more. Still, I don't think it's justified.
Right,
but...
they probably could have found a better line for it, but, you know. But it was, there was, because I think a lot of those little conversational moments, like either Harley or something else, kind of gets at their emotional core a little bit more. You know, like even Katana, where it's just like, oh, like, family wanted a son, and now you're hiding under a mask. And she just pulls off the mask and says, I am not hiding.
Yeah, that was
and
exciting.
I thought that was cool. But, like, she kind of evokes the emotions, the knife fight, if you will, out of everybody. And so it's easy to see how those stressful experiences can help them bond a little bit more. So...
Cool.
Anything else you want to talk about the extended cut? I mean, there's lots of little things we could talk about, but I just kind of wanted to get our main impressions.
I think that's about it. I would recommend watching it if you were at all a fan of this movie. I think you'll like it more.
It did make it feel a little longer for me. Like, I noticed that it
did
felt
it feel longer.
I don't know. Maybe it was because I had to pause a couple times.
How much longer was it?
It was about 15 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But I felt it. Anyways.
There was
a cameo by David Ayer.
Oh, yeah. That was funny.
That was funny.
That was a good scene.
He's the new trainee, I guess, who's dropping in food for Croc.
Yeah.
Anyways, what were you gonna say?
This time I really sympathize with Rick Flag, because I noticed this before, but I didn't really think about it. You know, sometimes you see but you don't observe. So I see Rick Flag just up in the middle of the night, just munching on fried chicken. Like, what the heck? why is that in the movie? But I like it because who has not woken up in the middle of the night and just pulled some random meal out of the fridge and just started eating it, you know? Like, that's totally what he's doing. Can't it's sleep. True American. Munch on some fried chicken.
True American.
The greatest special ops agent this world has ever seen. I can't remember what Amanda Waller called him.
Yeah.
But obviously, as an American, he's eating fried chicken. He wears a hat with a huge American flag on it for most of the first half of the movie. Maybe he is America personified.
Next time.
He's not fat enough. Not fat enough. Okay.
Anyways, so go check it out. It enhances, but does not drastically change the movie.
I will agree with that. Although, it got to my emotions a little bit more.
Good.
I'll say that.
Mission accomplished. Because, you know, David Ayer was saying, you know, as long as I touch Andy Piper's emotions with these extended scenes, I will have been a success.
And that's actually on the back of the Blu-ray case. Did you see that?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
It's written in that funky font, and it's like fluorescent colors.
Oh, yeah. And it kind of blends in with everything else. Unless you like are under some neon backlighting, you can't really see it.
Yeah. So give us your feedback. What did you guys think of the extended version? Sorry we were so late to the party and talking about it, but, you know, I like to make it easy for people to Christmas shop for me. Don't buy myself Suicide Squad. It's really a good deed. Let somebody else get it for me.
Yeah, that's what you get for releasing it the week before Christmas. I mean, it's just, yeah.
Okay, let's talk a little Justice League, eh?
Yeah, so it's been a while.
The animated series, I mean.
The animated series. So, our episodes for part 1 and 2 are entitled War World, or as I like to call it, Hunger Games, or Gladiator in space.
Yeah.
You know, insert Gladiator-esque movie here. So, just kind of a brief synopsis. Superman and Martian Manhunter are dismantling an asteroid, or breaking up an asteroid that's very large and could, you know, cause damage to the Earth. When it explodes and they are knocked out and taken captive to War World, where Mongol is the king or emperor or insert royalty title here, dictator.
The Tsar.
Yeah, the Tsar.
The head honcho.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The big kahuna.
Sorcerer Supreme.
That's a little too far, Taylor.
Oh, dang it. I always take it too far.
You crossed an uncrossable line.
Well, I'm just bringing
you just mentioned a movie from the company that shall not be named.
Dang it. So anyways, so Mongol is getting sick and tired of nobody being able to take down his famed Draga, who has been just single-handedly beating all the other competition in a gladiator match in space. But basically, Mongol distracts his people from the necessities of hunger and poverty by giving them gladiator matches. Anyways,
that's Superman. Kind of a deep theme hidden underneath this cartoon.
Right?
It's like, give them something to laugh at, some bloodlust. They'll totally forget they're starving and living in squalor.
That's totally like the Hunger Games feel for me, though. It's just like,
oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah. Anyways. Mm-hmm. So, Superman is put in the pit with Draga in part one and decides he takes down Draga but does not kill him, even against Draga's wishes to die honorably in battle. So, in part two, I guess you want to tell us a little bit about part two?
Yeah, so, basically, I mean, all the loose threads are tied up, if I can say that. Green Lantern and Hawkgirl come in, they save Martian Manhunter once again. He gets himself into all kinds of trouble. All three of those guys head to the War World after destroying the planetary laser that was going to blow up Draga's home planet. And they intervene in the fight, at which point Draga defeats Mongol.
And becomes the new Mongol.
Yeah, he becomes the new king head honcho of War World. Which is, I mean, hopefully he knows something about economics, because I don't know how smart it is to make you just the new champion, the head of the planet. Whatever.
And, you know, hopefully he decides to rename the planet, too, because, you know, people might have this expectation.
Oh, that's true.
Anyways, so what did you think about this episode, Andy?
I actually like this one quite a bit because it deals with things that are a little bit more uncomfortable, maybe. This has been one of my favorite episodes since I was a kid. I always remember this one, the one where Superman gets captured and forced to fight in this pit. just imagine how cool this episode would be if it was done live action, with like Henry Cavill and somebody as Jon Stewart and Hot Girl. I don't know. But yeah, that would be fun, and it would be brutal. It would be hard to watch because people are getting smashed. They're in these knockdown, drag out fights. Drag out, you see what I mean? Anyway, and you know what? I don't know how many of you out there are fans of the movie Rocky, but man, when Draga like gives that body shot to Mongol, you like hear some ribs crack, I swear. And it just made me think of Rocky, because Rocky just goes to the body like nobody you've ever seen. He's always just short uppercuts right to the ribs, just chopping down a tree. That's exactly what Draga did to Mongol.
Yeah, I think we've talked a little bit in some of the previous episodes about how there's like little action in some of the previous episodes.
Yeah.
But like this one is like entirely action.
Yeah, like, it kind of reminded me of like Dragon Ball Z. Like the fights are massively long. They're 10 minutes.
And they're kind of brutal too. Yeah. You know, like faces are getting smashed into walls and like entire things are getting smashed down on people. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it was brutal, but good.
Okay, so let's talk about Superman's character a little bit, because this is one theme that as we've gone through these first 7 or 8 episodes of Justice League, whatever episode we're on now, this is a fully evolved Superman, and I thought it was interesting because this is like quintessential, there's nobody in the world that can complain about this version of Superman. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because he knows who he is. He's reached that stage of his life where he's no longer doing things because the law tells him to, or because his parents said it was good to. He knows what he stands for and what he believes in, and that's his own reward for the way he acts. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's so unshakable as a moral figure. He's willing to give up his life to save Draga's home planet. He agreed to throw the fight against Mongol and let Mongol kill him. Like, he was going to do that, because he was just so confident that it was the right thing to do. And I think when we go and relate this to the live action, Henry Cavill's trying to figure that out still. Not the actor, but, you know, Henry Cavill Superman is trying to figure that out. And I think when he comes back, he's going to have had some life-changing experiences, you know, being dead for who knows how long.
Change of your life state.
It's a literal life-changing experience. Whoa. Okay, so anyway, I think he'll come back and he might be this moral figure, but through Man of Steel and through Batman v Superman, he was going up against things he'd never seen before. He was experiencing things in life he'd never seen before. Like, we're talking about a guy who didn't even have that much life experience, you know?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, kind of like, I like that point you brought up there. I think he'll come back with more of a straight arrow moral compass, where like, he kind of like, had this internal battle through the first two movies of like, what should I do? You know, like,
yeah.
Dad taught me this, but I know it to be this, and Lois is saying this, and we're like, I think he's going to come back, and those life-changing experiences are going to be like, I know what I need to do, I know what's right, I'm going to stand up for it. I hope so. I don't know. That's the Superman I think people want to see.
I don't criticize the characterization of Man of Steel Superman, because I do think there's a lot of it they got absolutely right.
It's a coming of age story.
One thing that I loved was, and he had reached that point, he knew this was the right thing to do and he was always going to do it. He needed to help the people around him. And you see, even though he's kind of like a vagabond traveling around the world Superman, everywhere he goes, Lois finds somebody who's willing to tell a tale about this impressively muscled man who just helped them and was nice to them. And then he just moved on and left. This guy that just saved all these people on an oil rig and just disappeared. They never saw him again. And I remember when Lois is like, the only way you're not going to attract attention is if you stop helping people. And I sense that's not an option for you, because it's not an option for him. He knows it's the right thing and he'll always do it.
Yeah.
And that's something that's so central to Superman. I don't think you can really call him Superman if he's not wanting to help people, wanting to save him. And I'm excited to see the rest of his moral compass filled in. Maybe when he comes back.
I think more than the moral compass, it's like his confidence in his moral compass.
It's more the decision, am I Superman or am I not? Am I ready to stand before the world and be uncompromising about what I'm here to do? I'm here to help people and I'm here to save the planet. And I think that's the decision he's going to have made. He already gave his life for the planet. His last words were, this is my world. Or maybe they were, you are my world. Same sentiment, really.
A little bit of both. It's in the same scene.
He made a decision, and he's gonna follow through with that. I have to believe that, because that is the Superman that I know and love.
Yeah. So that's what I really like about this episode, is it really shows that side of Superman. I kind of phrased it as, like, it shows his thick skin, both in his physicality, but also in his morality. It's in the big things, you know, like saving Draga's planet by sacrificing himself.
Yeah.
But also in the little things. There's a scene in the first part where he's chained up against a wall when Draga comes by. Draga, like, spits in his face and walks away. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Draga's out of the room, he breaks the chains. And the nearby prisoner's like, why didn't you do that when Draga was here? And he says, it's called turning the other cheek. And, like, I just love those little life lessons from Superman, like, that are just so, like...
Yeah, he's just full of those in the animated universe.
Oh, seriously. So it's like those little characteristic, like, this is my morality, and this is why you should have it, too.
Hey, that's a good thing for a kid to watch. I mean, I don't know that it offsets the massive amounts of punching people in the face in this episode. Yeah. But it's a good lesson for a kid to learn if they're paying attention.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's about all I have to say about this episode.
I think it's a great episode. One last thing I'll just say is I like that it wasn't very predictable. Like, I either hadn't seen this one or didn't have any recollection of it. And, like, I didn't quite know how everything was going to pan out. I feel like some of the other episodes are like, okay, yeah, I see. And then Wonder Woman's going to come in and this, you know. And I knew some of it, but... I liked that it kind of kept me on my edge, my seat a little bit.
Oh, this is one of the good ones, and I will give it an official rating right now. I will give it 3 out of 3.5 Mongol crowns.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of those around.
But if we translate it to letter grade, it wouldn't be Andy Piper on Beyond the Batcave podcast. So I will not translate it to letter grade. But I'll tell you that I like it a lot.
I would give it a high B+. If not, like, an A-. I don't know.
This is superb quality. It's about as good as you can get without being one of the absolute classic Justice League episodes.
I think you're right there.
Because there's still some things about it that are a little weird. Like, honestly, it's starting to bother me that Martian Manhunter goes down every episode.
He is the damsel in distress of the Justice League.
Especially, I think he's only second to Superman in terms of power level from the comics, if that.
Right.
Like, that's, he could probably take down Superman.
I'm waiting for the episode. There better be one where he saves everybody else.
Yeah. No, they save that kind of thing for Batman. Yeah. All right. Let's leave it there then.
Okay.
Taylor gives it a B+. If not an A-, I give it 3 out of 3.5 Mongol crowns. This one's definitely recommended.
Yeah. And so stay tuned. Our next episodes are The Brave and the Bold, Part 1.
There are so many things named The Brave and the Bold.
I know, right?
Like, I can't keep track of them anymore.
So this one is Flash and the Green Lantern against Gorilla Grodd. So that sounds to be a good time.
I think I remember this one.
Cool.
This one sounds fun.
Awesome. Well, stay tuned next time. And so that just about wraps it up here for stay tuned. Hopefully that's all you came here for.
Yeah.
Because that's all we're giving you.
Right.
So come back next time for Andy Piper and Taylor Jackson. This is Beyond the Batcave. Look us up on Twitter, on Facebook. You can just type in that name, beyondthebatcave.com.
Sweet, sweet name.
Sweet, sweet name. Just comment us, like us, follow us, hate us, if you will. We want to hear from you.
Listen, I don't invite hate. I have kind of a fragile psyche. I compare myself to Ben Affleck working on the Batman. Like, one wrong move and you guys could stop me making this podcast. If I don't have something special for a podcast, I just won't do it. There's not enough money out there for me to make a mediocre podcast.
So, to finish this episode, we will finish with the words of Mongol. Long live democracy.